Is it a good beach day where you are? It is here. A day to get a fold-up chair, maybe some sunscreen, maybe surf some waves. That is what a beach means to Americans today. But it wasn't always like that. For a look back at the history of beaches in this country, we are joined by historians Joanne Freeman and Brian Ballow, co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Welcome back.
Great
Thanks
to be
for
here.
Having us.
So let's go back to the beginning, Joanne, with you. We know the pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock on the beach.
they did.
But no one thought of it as a vacation spot back then. What did people think of the American shoreline in those days?
That is indeed true. No, it was not a place where you went and lay on the beach and caught some rays. It was actually, the beach was kind of a scary place in the 17th and even for part of the 18th century. It was a place where people departed into this vast unknown, right? The sea was a dangerous place. It was a place of shipwrecks. It was a place where disease came in with ships. So the ocean and the beach was not a place of relaxation at all. It was kind of seen as an uncontrollable place.
And it was seen also as an economic opportunity, as a port, as a place maybe you could go fishing.
For sure. And things came in through ports and ships. So for sure. And it was also, obviously, if you're talking about colonization, it's beginning in a sense when people land on a beach. So it's certainly serving many purposes. But the one purpose it's not serving is the one that we all assume today, which is this pleasant, happy place where you go to relax.
So when did that start? When did we start viewing the beach as a place of relaxation?
Well, there's kind of a transition moment. So in the late 18th century, people started to feel a little bit differently about the beach. They began to think of the ocean as kind of this invigorating space, and they began to think that sea bathing, so not swimming and not sunbathing, but sea bathing, was something that was good for you if you did it in 5 or 10 minute bursts. And so people would go out, sometimes just dip in the water. Sometimes they would be in these sort of barrel contraptions that were lowered into the water, and they would stay there for 5 minutes, and then they would be pulled out. Men were typically nude. Women were very covered up with very modest bathing suits.
Brian, you're chuckling in the background.
Well, I'm chuckling at the barrel, but of course, even into the late 19th century, at the beginning of the 20th century, when it came to actually swimming, women were really held back by their clothing. They were expected to wear long skirts, stockings. There were women who were competitive swimmers in swimming pools that still wore their shoes because it was inappropriate for women to not wear
It's not
wear
easy
those
to do
shoes.
That, by the way, in the water. That'll weigh you down.
It is not easy to do that.
So what about once the country started to industrialize? Then what happens to the beach?
Well, I think that's a major turning point. Joanne's absolutely right. There were more people who made their way to beaches, but it was not the kind of mass exodus to the beach in the summer that began once large urban cities had large working classes, large middle classes who could begin to take modern transportation like trains and eventually subways to the beach. And now you're really talking about millions of people, particularly from urban areas, Philadelphians going to Atlantic cities, New Yorkers going to Coney Islands, really just crowding the beaches. It was much less about nature and much more about subduing nature, in some ways turning the beach into a giant amusement park.
There are some beaches in this country that to this day are private beaches. Not anyone can go there, and other places where they're all public beaches. How did that get going?
Well, when you say some beaches, I mean, if you look at the state of Connecticut, it's still largely private beaches.
Right.
And this is something that began to take off after World War II. You know, we talk about the Coney Islands and the Atlantic cities, but in fact, most of the shoreline was very hard to get to. And most of the property along it, because it was hard to get to, really wasn't terribly valuable. It's the massive investment in infrastructure, a lot of it paid for by the federal government, that allowed certainly wealthy people, but even middle-class people, to begin to access the entire shoreline. And being Americans, one of the first things we did is try to own a little piece of that beach ourselves. So people built fences, people made access very hard, and towns made getting to the beach for outsiders from those towns very, very hard. They eliminated parking. They charged outrageous fees for access to the beach for outsiders.
So we've kind of gone from beaches as nature to beaches as leisure to beaches as real estate.
Well, and that brings us to the issue of race, which I want to ask you both about, and how that has played into the history of beaches in this country.
Well, sadly, one of the things that happened when beaches were privatized and access was restricted is that was done along class lines, and it absolutely was done along racial lines. I can remember going to the public beach growing up in Miami on Key Biscayne and passing by Virginia Beach, which was the black beach. At least there was a place for African Americans to swim. It was segregated along the lines of Jim Crow segregation. In states like Connecticut, where the beachfront was largely privatized, if you were a white person coming from the next town over, you wouldn't necessarily be stopped if you walked on to the town beach. But if you were an African American person, you could be pretty sure that you would be stopped. Selective enforcement, something we're very familiar with today.
And Joanne, what about the issue of gender? You talk about a swimmer named Annette Kellerman.
Indeed. There was a fascinating woman at the early 20th century named Annette Kellerman. She was Australian, and she was a very early proponent of swimming as a form of exercise and something for fitness. And one of the shocking things that she did was she wore a one-piece bathing suit that wasn't, like what Brian mentioned before, sort of fully dressed with pantaloons and a dress on top of it. She wore something that, you know, doesn't quite look like what we wear today, but it was shockingly clinging, I suppose. And so she, among other things, tried to swim. I think she's the first woman who tried to swim the English Channel. She did it, tried to do that three times. And in the end, she said she had the endurance, but she just didn't have the strength to do it. She also was wearing this heavy wool bathing suit. Right. So that was definitely not helping. But she's a fascinating character. And she went on not only to be an advocate for swimming, but one of the things she's mainly known for is really helping to encourage bathing costumes in which people could swim and enabling women to not basically go into the ocean in their clothes.
I want to put each of you on the spot now and tell me your favorite beach in America. Brian, I'll start with you.
Well, my favorite beach, does it have to be America?
Yes, it does have to be America. Sorry, your South of France retreat will not work in this game.
Rats!
Oh, that's too bad. Well, my favorite beach in America is the beach that I grew up going to. It's Crandon Park on Key Biscayne. In the Miami area. And it's my favorite because I loved hanging out on the beach in February and watching those insane people from the north, even Canada, go swimming in February. Who would go swimming in February? They weren't even wearing wool bathing suits.
Joanne, what about you? What's your favorite beach?
Well, I'm a remarkably unbeached person. So my favorite beach is pretty much the main one that I went to after my family moved to L.A., and that's the Santa Monica beaches, just that whole stretch of beach. It was near high school. If you didn't want to be in high school, the place you could be on a particular day was the beach. And that was kind of my introduction to Southern California and beach life. And so that stands out for me as a kind of a cultural shock in addition to being a nostalgic high school place in my mind.
It's a beautiful
and
beach.
And Jeremy?
Yes.
Jeremy, I just have to ask. It's only fair. How about you?
Well, I hope that our Hawaii listeners will be happy when I say that my favorite, I think, most beautiful is Lanikai Beach on Oahu. But,
ooh, fancy.
You know, I live on the East Coast, so you can't get there very often, unfortunately. Joanne Freeman and Brian Ballow, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Pass the suntan lotion, Jeremy.